Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from The Midult that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up.
Hi everybody, I'm Annabelle and I'm absolutely fine, but I am very busy at the moment. And I really resent busyness. You know, we live in a sort of cult of busyness where you say to someone, how are you? And they say, busy? To shut you up and also to prove that they are, you know,
to validate.
I don't like being busy. I like to have plenty of time to sit on my bed and stare at the wall. But that's not happening now. And I resent it. I resent the fact that I feel like my diary is the boss of me, whilst also having to acknowledge that it's much better for me than having empty time and that I have more energy. I feel less exhausted, less defeated, and just generally healthier in every way. And I don't like saying that out loud.
No, I know, it's a horrible thing to admit, isn't it? That the thing that you basically want to shore your life up against is actually the thing that might be propelling it forward in a positive way.
Yeah, really cross about that. How are you?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. Hi, I'm Emily. I'm absolutely fine. But I woke up on Sunday morning with an almost overwhelming feeling of restlessness.
What did that feel like?
Well, it feels like, and I've got it right now, and I think it, I don't know, I just can't unpack what it is. It feels like something is running up the inside of, from my chest up to my throat. So it's going, and it feels like it's a sort of internal manifestation of something that I should be doing. And I immediately got up and I thought, oh gosh, I better go for a walk.
So rather than some unnamed dread, is it like unnamed need?
Yes, it's unnamed searching for something that I don't know what it is. So it's like, what is the thing that I need to put there in order to stop it, to calm it down? And I don't know what it is.
Are you tearful as well?
I have been a little tearful. Yeah. I mean, it could be hormonal. It could be... It could be the demons. It could be excitement about kind of, you know, future projects that are happening. Who knows? But it's really odd because I can't put a name in on it. And I feel like I don't like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, long-time listeners of the podcast will know that our next guest is someone that we hold in extremely high regard. Addictions therapist, and I'm now going to say, and all-round badass.
Absolutely.
Mandy Saligari, and who has given us, and I mean definitely me, life-changing advice over the years. 5 weeks ago, Mandy was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 4, and last week began her chemotherapy. Now, feelings are her speciality. I mean, her TED talk is called Handle Your Feelings Before They Handle You. And she is here today to talk to us about everything that is going on. And I feel sort of stupid asking you this, but, you know, Mandy, how are you?
I would say I'm absolutely fine. Right this second, I feel quite emotional, actually. I feel quite emotional. You know, it's very strange. Before this diagnosis, I was saying to my team and people around me, I can't seem to be able to cry. You know, I don't know. I haven't cried for ages. I can't seem to be able to cry. And I've done a lot of crying in the last few weeks. Not sobbing, but just, you know, water coming out of my eyes. And yeah, I'm sitting here feeling quite emotional, actually.
It's funny when that happens, when you just start to leak from your face. Yes. You know, you're not howling or sobbing, but it needs to come out. Maybe it's 30 years worth, maybe it's 5 weeks worth.
Yeah.
But this is maybe turning out to be a portal to all sorts of...
It is. It is. It's been a ride, let's say.
What happened?
So I've got rheumatoid arthritis, right? So I hurt all the time. And there's a sort of low level of pain all the time. And my right shoulder had been aching for a bit. And I was away, I'd taken time off over the summer. And my shoulder was really aching. And I asked a friend of mine, I was in a bikini, and I asked a friend of mine, who's an A&E nurse. And I said, well, what do you reckon to this? And she said, well, your shoulder blade is about 45 degrees sticking out from your back. She said, I don't like the look of it. You ought to go and get a scan. And I was in Turkey. And I thought, okay. So I booked myself in for a scan with a really good hospital. The healthcare is amazing. And I had to drive 4.5 hours to the hospital to go and get this scan. And as I was driving, I had the windows open. I was playing music. And I was aware somewhere in the back of my mind that these were really precious moments. I sort of knew this feeling. I don't know why, but I remember thinking it. And I got to the hospital. I met the translator. And she was like, oh, don't worry. And I was like, do I look worried? And she said, yeah, you look a bit worried. And she said, don't worry. We'll just pop you in for a scan and blah, blah, blah. I went in for the MRI scan. And when I came out, the atmosphere was very different. Mm. And I had this, like, you know, hushed voices and people sort of glancing at each other. And they gave me a cup of tea. And, you know, in Turkey, they usually charge for tea. And I thought, oh, okay. And then I went
free
and had
tea.
Free tea, not looking good. And then I went and had a CT scan and then had to go and meet the senior doc. And he just turned his screen around and he said, I'm so sorry. And there was something that looked a bit like alien crawling up over my shoulder, which was a 9-centimeter mass. And it was that moment, you know, when somebody says to you, you've got cancer. And, you know, it's like, it's inescapable. It's like driving down the main road and you get diverted down a one-way street and you can't turn around.
Yeah.
You know, you're in it. You can't turn around. You're in a one-way street. And I just felt myself just... And it was very weird because I didn't feel frightened. I feel sort of sick as I'm talking about it now, but at the time I didn't feel frightened or sick. The first thing I said was, oh, my God, what am I going to do about my children? You know, because I'm pretty much all they've got. And I just sort of sat there and listened. And then I said, OK, I just need to go and take it in. So I went and took it in for a minute. And then I decided to ring my kids. And I said, look, are you all together? And two of them were together. And I just thought, I just want to be completely transparent. And that's how I've done this all the way through. Mm. I was just like, and I told them and I watched them both crumple and cry. And then I just saw them pull together. I said, I'm coming home.
Yeah.
So I went and sat outside in my car. I was on my own. I went and sat outside and I looked out across this beautiful valley. And I thought, it was so weird, this overwhelming sense of peace and gratitude just washed through me. And for the first time, I just thought, you know, I thought I have lived a really good life for the last 30 years.
Mm.
And it was this feeling of, you know, just feeling really peaceful with everything that I've done and with who I am. And I felt really grateful. And in that moment, just everything felt so sharply beautiful.
Mm.
So strange.
I mean,
I know.
What a shame that that's what it takes after all the work that you've put in and all you've given to people.
So strange. You know, it's really weird. It's like you teach best that which you most need to learn.
Mm.
And I thought that I was taking in as much as was on offer and so on, and just wasn't true. I mean, this whole diagnosis has broken a part of me, which in a way I'm grateful for, if that doesn't sound too weird, because I had no idea. I just had no idea how much sort of love and beauty and kindness, real kindness there is out there.
And kindness that's meant for you as well.
Yes, exactly.
You know, this thing that's yours, that is, you know.
And that you deserve.
Yeah.
Like, purely.
It's really hard. I'm hearing you say it and I can still hear a bit of like, okay, going on, but yes.
No. I mean, I can't say it enough. But I mean, I'm sure everybody who's come into contact with you in either a professional...
Walks away richer.
Yes, exactly.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online.
Okay, serious question. How many times have you been out recently? Actually, you know, scratch that. How many times have you woken up the day you were supposed to go out and felt flooded with dread? How long have you spent praying that the other person will cancel so you don't have to?
And yet, just as we're avoiding people, so many of us feel really lonely and more tired than ever, particularly now the days are getting a bit longer and you think, how am I going to have the energy to go out into the world?
Our social batteries are very flat at the moment, and that can make us feel isolated, which can lead to trouble. And in my experience, therapy has helped me track my best energy sources and helped me better identify what leaves me feeling depleted.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not give BetterHelp a try?
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch anytime for no additional charge.
With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise.
Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/midult. That's better, help.com/midult.
BetterHelp. Because sometimes the best thing to do is acknowledge that we are not, in fact, absolutely fine.
Exactly. I mean, I just remember sitting, listening to you talking, you were on stage, and I'd met you in the green room before, but you were on stage and you were talking about codependence, and it unlocked a whole key to my life, my childhood, my growing up, everything. And now I'm going to cry. But, you know, and it has helped me in the way that I look at my relationships with my children and my husband and my friends, my family, everything. And you did that. You did that in 5 minutes.
And it's miracle work.
Yeah. So, you know, if anybody deserves to, and it's not a... It's not an if anybody deserves, but you deserve to be able to feel all of the things that you're feeling right now.
Doesn't make it easy, but it is an ambition that you have around this, isn't it? To feel the feelings.
It's interesting because, yes, you know, I said I want to do this my way. When I got home, I spoke to my kids and I said, you know, I really want to try and do this my way. Because when you get this, when I got this diagnosis, you know, it literally is like being in a one-way street. You can't turn off it. You're now in the system. Now all the MRIs, the PET scans, you know, is it treatable? Is it not treatable? Take the biopsy. And you just have to roll with what's going on. And I'm just like, I really want to do this my way. And the only way I know how to do this is actually to feel the feelings as they're happening. And people sort of said to me, you know, I know you're scared. And I'm thinking, no. I'm actually not scared. Mm. I feel really weird. You know, my mum's got dementia, and in the simplicity of her dementia, she sort of sits there and says, the only thing that really matters is love. Mm. You know, and I'm right there with her. Mm. It's like to kind of try and understand things through the lens of just loving something or someone, or understanding, not judging. Who the hell am I to tell you who you should be? Just to listen, to stand beside, to bear witness to. Just kindness, you know? Just. Yeah. And I decided to go onto social media. I just made the decision to be completely transparent because both of my two oldest children are in recovery from addiction. And I said to them, when I talked to them, I said, you must be allowed to share this. You must be allowed just to talk. You must be allowed. Don't lock it inside. Don't tiptoe around. Don't keep the secret. Don't tiptoe around me. You know, none of us know what's going to happen. None of us. There's so much uncertainty. You know, and the cancer card's like a big card to play into your day. And so I thought, well, if they're going into the fellowships and talking about it in there, loads of people are going to know. I need to tell all my clients because otherwise they're going to be wondering where I've gone. So I thought, well, if I'm going to tell all my clients and my kids are going to talk about it in the fellowships, I just thought I'm just going to talk about it openly. And so I did. I just talked about it openly. And the unbelievable amount of connection, identification, questions, support, love, feedback has been mind-blowing. Mm. I mean, it's been like a little friend. Mm. You know, people just calling in and, you know, people who've got really difficult lives and shit going on in their lives, and they're still writing, you know, good morning, Mandy, how are you today? And that sort of other-centeredness, it's just really touching.
Yeah.
You know, it's just people in their own lives, doing their own things, they've still got a moment to check in and say, are you okay today?
Because of all the kindness, but also because you are reaping what you have sowed.
Yeah, maybe.
You are. This is a big old dividend for all the work that you've done and all the people that you've helped. You know, it is, isn't it, Emily?
I
it's not just happening, you know, randomly.
No, but then if you think about it, you know, being good, in inverted commas, does not offset shit things happening,
no.
Right?
No.
You know, if I love a guy, right, and I'm really good to him, it doesn't mean he's going to treat me well.
Yeah.
Okay, so being good doesn't give you some sort of karmic advantage. In fact, it was really weird because I was talking to my oldest son, Dan, and we were talking about karma, and I said, so what's my fucking karmic debt? What is it? And Dan said to me, do you know what? He said, everybody gets it wrong on social media about karma. Karma's coming to punish you. Karma will get them. You don't have to get them. Karma will get them. He said, karma is not out to punish. He said, karma is about balance. He He said, you've been living out of balance for the last 20 years. He said, you know, you've shouldered a massive burden. You've just brought us up, started the company, you know, worked in the industry you work in. And he said, and I think you've neglected your body and now it's your body's turn. He said, it's just karmic balance.
It's interesting, the metaphor about shouldering and then
isn't it?
The shoulder, isn't it? The mass. Sorry, that isn't really it? Had made me ping up in a kind of, yeah.
Isn't it?
Wow.
Isn't it? I know, because apparently it's really unusual to get cancer of the shoulder.
I mean, it sounds like a joke, was it, like that, which it emphatically isn't. But then, so you came back to England and then you discovered that it was treatable.
So
because when someone said stage four, you think...
Yeah. So I came back and they just put me through every single scan known to man. I mean, literally the whole of my body all over. And I was whooped through the system in a week. Biopsy taken. They've got this thing on my shoulder. They didn't take it out of the bone, which is really painful. They took the biopsy out of the lymph gland. And then I went away to Turkey for a week because I thought I just want to live in denial for 1 week.
Because you've been living in Turkey.
I've been touring and foraying to Turkey. So I rent a flat down there and just take breakout time there and then home and my kids come. And it's a lovely, lovely way to live, to be fair. Very lucky. So I went and waited down there, went swimming at midnight. It was lovely. And then they rang me and said, it's lymphoma. So non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is highly treatable. It's the most treatable form. So stage four with lymphoma is different to stage four with anything else. So even though it's in my liver, it's in my spine, it's all over my body, the lymphoma treatment is the most researched. It's an established care pathway. It's got massive success rates. So I am lucky to have this one. There is other sides of it. We won't know the full prognosis until the first 6 months are done, but we're going for it with the lymphoma. So yes, so I came back knowing that that's what it was, it's treatable, and started the whole process of going into chemotherapy.
And so is it 9 days away from your first chemotherapy?
Yeah, so where are
treatment?
We with it? No, seven.
Seven days.
And so I went in, I did 2 days, so I had to do 6 hours and then 4 hours of chemo. What a whacked out experience that was as well. So you remember, you know, I'm an addict in recovery, right? So alcohol was never my thing. You know, gambling was never my thing. Drugs were my thing, right? Drugs and men, right? But it's not a pretty sight to be on cocaine with a man in my sight. Scary. Anyway, so drugs and men. So yes, and there I am, amped up on steroids, right? And feeling like I've been on sort of a cocaine binge for 3 days and then I've dropped a Quaalude and somewhere in the middle I've taken a load of acid. I mean, that's basically what it felt like. I went
in a good way?
Oh my God, it was horrendous. It was horrendous. I'm like, I cannot believe that I used to pursue this feeling. Oh,
but it was really interesting on your Instagram, which I urge you to look at, because Mandy's documenting her journey and with complete transparency and honesty. And you wrote, you know, I can feel it.
Yeah.
I can actually feel it, yes, going into myself. I'm
through your veins. Through,
yeah, and there's something about obviously having been, you know, you have a lot of clean time, most of more of your life by far. So the idea that you're so sent, you know, you can feel the toxins that are going in.
Yes, I could actually feel it. So I've got this port in my chest. So you have a choice when you've got chemo as to have these lines that get tapped into your arm or into your chest so that they don't have to keep opening up a vein, right? And you can just open up a couple. They're called PICC lines. And I asked for the one in my chest because it means that I can actually go swimming if I want to. So it gives me freedom. And I'm also really clumsy. I knew if I knock this bloody thing on my arm all the time, I just knew it would be awful. Anyway, so I got this port in my chest and literally she put the first pass into my chest and I felt it go in. I could actually feel the toxins going into my body. And the chemo, I mean, I was just thinking, it was very strange because I thought, I've got to visualise this. So the day before I was thinking, okay, mind, spirit and emotion, right? They're the allied forces and they're all strong, right? But the body has been invaded by cancer, right? So the allied forces are going to come in. So they had a secret meeting with the body on the Sunday. And they said, we're coming in tomorrow around 10 o'clock and we are going to go into full Chernobyl attack on the body. So hide all your resources, hide anybody who's valuable, put a few nobodies on the street so that the cancer doesn't have any suspicions, right? So I go into I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, buddy, are you ready? Yeah. We're coming in under stealth mode.
The battle mode is set.
Yeah, battle mode is set. So, and the atomic bomb was dropped on my body, right? So Chernobyl created, but hopefully everybody's underground, ready to come back and do the cleanup action. And mind, emotion and spirit are my allied forces coming in to support the body at this point. So this is what I was thinking when I was doing the chemo. I'm thinking that's what's going on.
Were you frightened at that point?
No.
Has there been fear for you?
The only time I got scared was when I was talking to a really good friend of mine, one of my closest friends who's been with me throughout all of this. And I just said to her, I can put up with absolutely anything. I can go through any amount of suffering. I just don't want to die.
Yeah.
I don't want to die.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to die. I got too much to do. I don't want to die.
Yeah. And so you've drawn your line in the sand, haven't you? You're not saying, I'm scared I'm going to lose my hair.
No.
I'm scared I'm going to be sick. I'm scared I'm going to be a burden to people. I'm scared, you know, I'm sorry to anyone listening, I'm talking out of turn, because it's not something that I have experienced. But you have said that's where it is for me.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I don't want to die.
I'm just thinking about the way that one, you know, names the feelings, names the fear. It's really interesting. And I think it's so amazing that you can do that for yourself. Rather than thinking, my immediate thought, the codependent, would be like, I'm scared to die because of the people I love, you know, whatever. I don't think I could own it for myself, and you own it for yourself, and that's amazing.
Yeah, I don't want to leave my kids. Yeah. I've got things to do.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm awake. Mm. I thought I was awake before. What a moron, honestly. I was not awake. I'm just like, wow, this world is unbelievable. It's fabulous. It's really beautiful. I mean, I feel like I am just looking at people, and like I've done a few sessions, which I'm not going to be able to do, I don't think, going forward, because I'm going to really focus on getting well, and I want to focus on writing a lot, and I want to focus on really experiencing what I'm going through, but... Just
also hard for a client to know that their therapist is sick and then say, my boyfriend's being really mean to me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I resent my mum.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, totally. It's not fair.
To burden you in the way they should be able to.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, need to step away. But I feel like a knife through butter.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like not cut to the chase, but really there's nothing like the clarity that comes from just absolutely... seeing that we're all walking on this cliff edge and being so aware of the sort of death drop to the right.
Yeah.
You know, and the clarity that comes out of it. And it's not cruel clarity. It's just like, it's just really simple and really clear.
So this is a proper experience.
It's a proper experience. Isn't it? And I want to have it.
Yeah.
And I want the good stuff out of it. And there's a kind of gift that goes with it. There's a real gift that goes with it. You know, I feel so grateful. I mean, my kids and I, we've just been, just the closeness, the strength that's come out of it, the clarity that's come out of it. Yeah, just the appreciation for life.
How have you felt physically in the last week?
Oh, God, awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Everything they Body's say is
wreck.
True.
Yeah.
Body's a
also,
wreck.
By the way, Mandy also looks amazing. I mean, frustratingly so. Like, you couldn't...
Like supermodel good.
Yeah, exactly.
Blonde, brown, blue eyes,
your
sapphires.
Eyes are looking so clear. It's like...
What kind of wig shall I get?
Well, you could have more than one, can't you?
Yes, do you know what?
Multiple wigs.
I thought I'd go everything from the sort of Farrah Fawcett to the Uma Thurman Pulp Fiction. Might even get myself a Mohican for the pissed off days.
As a Mohican glued onto a swimming
hat. Do you remember
hat?
The old days? Yes. Down the King's Road, a.k.a. 1980.
Like the young ones.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
No, body was awful. I mean, my God, Saturday. So I did 3 days where I was feeling a bit tired, but I sort of thought I was getting away with it. And then Saturday, the decline was as quick as dropping a stone. I mean, honestly, 1 second I was kind of feeling a bit off. The next thing, I mean, I'm sorry, but I was sick. I had diarrhea. There was no controlling anything.
Yeah.
My kids got worried. They rang the Royal Free where I'm getting the chemo. They said go to A&E. And they gave me fluids. Antibiotics, fluids, painkiller, and antibiotics and anti-sickness, a really powerful anti-sickness. And the weird thing about anti-sickness, which I didn't know until this morning, is that anti-sickness doesn't work if you feel nauseous. Your body won't absorb an anti-sickness drug if you feel nauseous.
Well, so they have to get it to you in the window in
when
between
you're not feeling nauseous.
Feeling sick and feeling sick.
Yes. So when you have your chemo, even if you don't feel sick, you've got to take your anti-sickness meds. But if it's not the right anti-sickness med for you, it won't necessarily work.
Right.
So I was taking them, but it didn't work. It worked for a couple of days, and then it wasn't the right one for me or whatever. But by the time I felt sick, the anti-sickness stuff doesn't absorb, so then you have to have it intravenously.
Do you now know the right anti-emetic or whatever for you?
I know the one they gave me at the weekend was a gift.
What was the time period for this episode? Was it over?
Started Saturday morning. So I was being sick. So it was about 36 hours of diarrhea and sickness.
Right.
So you can imagine.
And cramps.
And cramps like.
Agony.
I mean, really agony. Sweating. I mean, my kids were like, you went absolutely white as a sheet. And I'm tanned. I just said you went absolutely white. And they were frightened.
And this is the chemo supposedly doing its job, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, if I'm suffering like this, I keep thinking, well, the cancer must be really fucking suffering.
Yeah. Fucking cancer, yeah, completely.
And so you're going to use, it's an every 3 week protocol.
Yeah, I'm going every 3 weeks. So basically you have the chemo, the immune system crashes, you get sick. The following week, the immune system starts to pick up. Then you can have a test to see where your immune system is.
White
and
cells
in those last 5 days pre the next chemo, potentially you're free to go and do whatever you want. Jump out of a plane, go to Turkey, do whatever it is I want to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to bank the good stuff.
Yeah.
So because, you know, even when you're sitting in the chair, when shit things are going down, you want rocking chair stories, you want memories, you want things to chuckle about. I want to know that I'm someone worth fighting for.
Yeah,
right?
Choose life, right?
Yeah, and I want to know that some of those things are really funny and there's unexpected things about me and there's things that I'm going to plot and do and there's going to be, you know, nice stuff to do and, you know, dancing to be had and
singing
to be done and night swims to be had and
so
boys to be flirted with.
Oh,
men, boys.
Stop it, Mandy.
Because that was a weird one. I think I said this to you before we came in. The minute, that was the other thing. This really tied into being an addict is that when I was told I had cancer, something happened with me is that I felt like an invisible glass dropped down between me and the outside world.
Mm.
Like suddenly, and it's not the case, it's my experience. I don't want to offend anyone, but I felt dirty.
Yeah.
I felt like suddenly I had a sort of death card or a dirty card or a leper card or like nobody would fancy me. Nobody would want to be with me. Nobody, because somehow now my story is too big or my story is going to be, I don't know, whatever it is. But there was, and it reminded me of when I was an addict, when I owned being an addict, that people would look at me like, you know, you're dirty. There's something wrong with you. An addict is, you know, this thing. And I really felt it.
Yeah.
And it felt really isolated. It felt just in an instant, I felt like other.
It's very shamey, isn't it?
Yeah, there's something about it that I'm not, maybe it is shame, that I'm somehow I'm not, yeah, that I'm other.
Is that a default thing, do you think?
No.
Do you think that's a...
Have you not always felt a little bit other?
I've always felt a bit other, but I'm okay with being a bit other.
Right,
okay.
So this is not other in a good way?
This was other in a kind of, yeah, I mean, the word, it's not a nice word, it's a dirty, it's like, you know, like...
sort of contaminated.
So, yeah, that's it.
Has it stayed with you?
Well, I tell you what helped, and that was all the connection on social media.
Medicine for that bit.
Honestly. Mm. People reaching out, grateful, loving, people identifying... Other people suffering from it, other people feeling the same. It's exactly the same as the fellowships. You sit in a room with people who are addicts and look at them and think, I think you're amazing. So if you're amazing, I can be amazing.
Yeah.
We can all... But it was, it was that feeling. You know, and it's thinking my story will be too much for someone.
Well, then they're not enough.
Yeah.
For you. So you're going to take your 5 days... Before each chemo session.
And my plan.
Do something
have
with
a rager.
Them.
I'm going to go and have a nice time with my bodyguard, oldest son. He's not letting me out of his sight,
okay,
actually.
That might, that yes, might stop
Mandy's bodyguard, oldest son, is downstairs. Yeah. Having a cup of coffee while we record.
Yeah, he's been amazing.
Have you felt out of control at all around the uncertainty emotionally in the last 5 weeks?
Do you know what? I think that's something that my addiction recovery has really given me. I am good at surrendering to help. I'm good at trusting the process. I'm a really good patient.
Yeah.
I'm a really good patient. I can put myself in the hands of doctors or in the hands of a higher power, in the hands of... I'm not controlling. I'm probably too liberal, if anything.
Yeah.
I feel this acceptance, surrender to help, surrender to a process. There's something in those fellowship rooms that offers you an opportunity to clear your conscience.
Yeah.
And is that where some of the gratitude came from? I think so. Right at the beginning, yeah.
I think the gratitude, the sense of peace, the feeling of a clear conscience. I don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
You know, I'm up to speed with everyone and everything. So there was no backlog to go, oh my God, what about this? What about that? I need to sort this or that.
Yeah.
None of that was there. There was genuine concern for my kids. How will they be? And then there was this desire to... just to live,
yes.
Mm.
You know, desire, this force of, you know, life.
Well, I mean, I look forward to you coming back in a few months' time to tell us, you know, where it's taking you and what's happening next. But
Thank you.
We have such love for you. We're so grateful that you're here.
So grateful.
It's a gift. It's a gift to us. It's a gift to everyone who's listening. So, love you too, all the love in the world.
You know that. I love you too.
We all have hysterics now. Yeah. We're going to say thank you for listening. Yes. Thank you to Mandy. And we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Annabel Rifkin and Emily McMeekin of The Midult. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review and subscribe.